Last night, the power went out, and I was still, I confess, working on the message here. So I couldn't see my keyboard while I was typing along, and I'm not that good at it. So I got a flashlight. But the batteries were low, and it wouldn't give off enough light. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, what good is a dim flashlight? So I was doing some research earlier about the future of batteries. And soon coming are batteries that are amazing. They're going to be so powerful. They'll charge in seconds. They'll last for, get this, months. And they'll power over the air. Pretty amazing, right? And one of these batteries that they're talking about, they call them gold nanowire batteries in gel electrolytes. Maybe some of you know what I'm talking about. I have no idea. And apparently, they're amazing batteries. I can't wait till they come out. But you know what? For now, I just have the plain old multi-pack of Rayovac. And, you know, they're not the best batteries. They wear out kind of fast. But I changed the batteries in my flashlight, and the light still shines. God called Israel to be a light to the nations. It seems that they were a failed light, as we've been following along in the prophets. It seems like, at best, they were a dim light. But God still speaks his word through them. And in these last pages of the books of the prophets, these last days of the Old Testament, God is still calling Israel to shine their light ahead to the one who is coming, to the promised Messiah, who is going to rescue his people with compassion. You know, Jesus said to his followers, "You are the light of the world." We are, as his followers, the light of the world. And like Israel, we have a mission to reflect boldly and brightly who God really is. And today we discover in Jonah something startling about God. Are you ready? This is actually pretty big. This needs to shine through us. Here it is. God shows unfailing compassion and shocking grace to people who don't deserve it. So if you're filling in the blanks today, God shows compassion and grace to people who do not deserve it. So today, it marks our eighth week in our final week of going through the prophets series in the Old Testament. And since we're finishing in the book of Jonah, we actually have a bit of advantage in understanding its message, because even though this book is probably dated earlier on and the timing is not clear, it's most likely at the beginning of the prophets, at the beginning of Israel's prophetic ministry. And since we've already seen God's eventual judgment and the outcome of all this on the nations, we kind of have an advantage over Jonah in understanding the end result. Maybe. Maybe not. And that's why this story seems to have such a strange twist as it starts out. Why does Jonah run away? God sends him as a messenger, right, to the capital city of Nineveh, the capital of Assyria. And we know that for Israel, Assyria has been an enemy to God's people. And so now God is calling Jonah to go pronounce this judgment upon the evil Nineveh. I mean, what greater thing for the prophet of Israel to do, right? Pronounce judgment on his enemies. God tells Jonah, "I have seen how wicked its people are." Or as we heard in the kids' Bible, how bad they really are. Have you ever smiled at the thought of someone getting the punishment they deserve? You know, maybe a brother or sister who keeps picking on you. Just wait, right? Or maybe it's a fellow student who keeps cheating on their homework. Just wait. Or maybe it's a coworker who never gets their work done. Just wait. You know, just keep it up. I dare you. You're going to get what's coming to you. Just wait. You know, for Jonah, everything seems like it's finally coming together. Nineveh is in God's crosshairs. Jonah has just delivered, or he just has to deliver the message. So what does he do? He runs away, right? He runs away. That's crazy. Why run? Well, we don't find out yet as we're reading into the story, but we do discover that he was pretty serious about running away. So he went down to the port of Joppa, and there he found a ship leaving for Tarshish. He bought a ticket and went on board, hoping to escape from the Lord by sailing to Tarshish. So if we look at this map up here, we see that not only did he try to go a little bit away from Nineveh, he goes 2,000 miles in the other direction. That was his plan. But we find out that God doesn't let Jonah get to Tarshish. Instead, where does his running from God land him? Kids, where does Jonah end up after being thrown into the sea?
In a whale's
belly, right? The belly of a big fish. So, is that possible? You know, for some... Thank you, appreciate that. For some of us, you know, it may seem highly unlikely that a big fish shows up at just the time Jonah needs him at that very moment. But I think, really, that's the point, isn't it? You know, God did something miraculous in the moment, something that seems improbable, even impossible. God rescues Jonah from certain death by sending a big fish to swallow him whole. You see, that's the point. It's a divine intervention, a miracle by our standards, and it points to something far greater that's going on. It's revealing the startling truth about the God of Jonah, and that is this. God shows unfailing compassion and shocking grace to people who do not deserve it. So the first one who receives compassion is Jonah. So how do you feel about God giving Jonah a second chance? Pretty good. Is it fair? Even if he tried to run away from God? You know, if you're thinking that if you're like me, I kind of agree with you there. I'm thinking, you know, this is good because I can identify with Jonah. You know, like him, I don't always get it right. I don't always go in the right direction. I don't always, even sometimes I may intentionally go the other direction from where God intends us to go. Maybe you're in that same boat. I get it. And I'm glad that God offers Jonah a second chance because it reveals this quality of God that you and I really need to trust. And that is that God offers us second chances. That's good news. So do you need a second chance today? Maybe you're in that place. It seems that in this story, God honors small steps in the right direction. So Jonah couldn't outrun God. He realized that he was in trouble in this storm, and he did the right thing for the rest of the crew in the boat. Rather than the storm sending everyone perishing to the bottom of the sea, Jonah volunteers to go overboard. And how did God honor that step by Jonah? Well, he rescued him by this really big, huge walleye from Lake Travers. Now, I have heard some of your fish stories from Lake Travers. And I have to tell you that they have no comparison to this monster-sized fish that came and swallowed up Jonah. So it's really important for you and I right now to understand Jonah's response to this rescuing act of God. He's not asking for forgiveness at this point in the belly of the fish. He's not asking to be saved. He's already safe. He's in the fish, but he's safe. He recognizes God's compassionate, undeserved act of grace, and Jonah thanks God. The scripture says, "Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from inside the fish. I sank down to the very roots of the mountains. I was imprisoned in the earth, whose gates lock shut forever. But you, O Lord my God, snatched me from the jaws of death." So this is a second chance act by a compassionate God. It's not anything that Jonah does. This is all God. And Jonah realizes it, and he praises God from inside the walleye, the fish. This is a short little book, Jonah, 4 chapters, and now in chapter 3, starts off the second half, we find Jonah back on the beach where he started running away from God. Now he obeys God and he goes to Nineveh with the message. He tells them, 40 days and God will bring destruction on Nineveh. So when they hear God's message, They do the exact opposite of Jonah. This is interesting. Jonah heard God's message to go to Nineveh, and he ran the other way. Nineveh hears God's message of destruction, and they turn to God, and they stop doing the bad things that they were doing. So verse 10 shows God's response to their step. When God saw what they had done and how they had put a stop to their evil ways, he changed his mind and did not carry out the destruction he had threatened. Now, how do you feel about God offering Nineveh a second chance? How do you like the thought of someone who does not get the punishment that they deserve? How do you feel when it's not true that you're going to get what's coming to you? For Jonah, everything was, it seemed like, finally as it should be. He delivered the message of destruction. He waited for Nineveh, who was in the crosshairs of God, to be destroyed. And then something totally undeserved happened. God honored Nineveh's small step in the right direction and gave them a second chance. And this creates, I think, a huge dilemma. You know, we all have to come to terms with this startling truth about the God of Jonah. God shows shocking grace and undeserving compassion to people who don't deserve it. And God shows compassion to the people of Nineveh. So here's our second point. And Jonah, he is ticked off, isn't he? The Bible says that this change of plans greatly upset Jonah, and he became very angry. So now we finally figure out why he is acting so crazy in the first chapter and trying to run away from God. He says, so he complained to the Lord about it. Didn't I say before I left home that you would do this, Lord? This is why I ran away from Tarshish. I knew that you are a merciful and compassionate God, slow to get angry and filled with unfailing love. You are eager to turn back from destroying people. You know, Jonah lets out this alarming attitude about how he views God's character. For Jonah, God is too compassionate to the wrong people. Ouch. What do you think? Is it possible? Is God too compassionate to the wrong people? Maybe. Is it possible that you and I feel a little bit like Jonah sometimes? We feel that God's grace is actually kind of scandalous to those who don't deserve it. Have you ever thought this about someone? You're gonna get what you deserve. But we have to ask ourselves, does God have the right to perform shocking and undeserving acts of compassion for anyone he chooses, including our enemies? Jonah didn't think so. He said, just kill me now, Lord. I'd rather be dead than alive if what I predicted will not happen. In other words, if Nineveh is not destroyed in 40 days, and the Lord replied, is it right for you to be angry about this? Is Jonah right? Is God too compassionate to the wrong people? Does Jonah have a right to be angry? Now, the rest of the chapter is kind of interesting. It's a little object lesson for the answer to this question. You know, Jonah goes out to wait to see if he's right. Will God destroy Nineveh like he thinks they deserve? And while he waits, he builds this shelter, but it's not good enough to protect him from the sun. So God, in his compassion, actually makes this plant grow up really fast, and it begins to shade Jonah from the overwhelming heat. It says, this eased his discomfort, and Jonah was very grateful for the plant. So I'm going to give you a little Hebrew lesson. I don't do this very often, and I'm not an expert in Hebrew, but I know how to read experts in Hebrew. So here's what they told me. That this word between discomfort in verse 4, or in verse 6 here, and the one destruction in verse 3, they're actually the same words in Hebrew. So in other words, this lesson makes this parallel between Jonah's discomfort, which God eases, and Nineveh's destruction, which God relents from bringing upon them. So the reprieve for Jonah in this moment here is actually kind of short-lived because God makes this worm come up and he eats the plant. The plant wilts and dies. And then God sends this driving wind to blow on Jonah and dry him up. The sun beats down. He's so distraught that, again, he complains that he would just rather be dead. Then God said, "Is it right for you to be angry because the plant died?" "Yes," Jonah retorted, "even angry enough to die." Is Jonah right? Does he have the right to be angry? Then the Lord said, "You feel sorry about the plant, though you did nothing to put it there. It came quickly and died quickly." So God demonstrates scandalous compassion on Jonah. Remember, first time with the fish coming to rescue him in the deep sea. And then again, he gives this scandalous compassion by allowing a plant to grow up and give him shade over this burning heat while he's waiting for Nineveh to be destroyed. So God came and graciously rescued him both times. And then to make a point, God removes his compassion. The plant dies and Jonah overheats. So now God reveals his astonishing character that Jonah and all of us have to come to terms with. And it's this in verse 11. "But Nineveh has more than 120,000 people living in spiritual darkness, not to mention all the animals. Shouldn't I feel sorry for such a great city?" So this is the question we have to answer today. Should God feel sorry for Nineveh? Does God have the right to show unfailing compassion and shocking grace to whomever God chooses, including those who we think don't deserve it? You know, we discover in this passage that God's delight is in responding to small steps in the right direction with this undeserved gracious compassion. What small steps are you and I being called to? You know, if God responds with compassion to the fugitive Noah, or Jonah, and if God responds with compassion to evil Nineveh, and if God responds with compassion to Israel, who we have read throughout the prophets continually turns away from God, then I think you and I can trust that God will respond with compassion to you and I. And God will respond with compassion to those around us. The pastor shares this story. I think it kind of describes our attitude here toward others. There was a self-appointed New Age guru who glided into our church wearing an outfit that rivaled Merlin the Magician's best duds. So it was right before service. A couple of ushers popped their heads in and said, "Pastor, I think we have a situation." So after explaining who had just entered the sanctuary, they asked, "You know, what do you want us to do?" And underneath their question was this context: "You want us to, like, usher him out?" Perfect love casts out fear. That was the pastor's first thought. "Well," I said, as he was putting on his microphone, "we should demonstrate that we love him and that he's welcome here." And the second thought that came to his mind is, "For this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "Tell you what," the pastor said, "if he's here seeking truth, let's let him listen. God's word will be proclaimed and God's truth will be revealed. And if he's here to make trouble, we'll know soon enough. And in that case, I'll warn him just once not to disrupt the service, and I'll politely ask him to stay after so we can get to know him better. And if he persists in making trouble, then we'll follow through on our promise to remove him politely. And if that happens, one of you should maybe just call the police in case." So I looked out, and I saw the man and began a silent prayer that he would know that he was loved. God's perfect love was casting out fear in the messenger. So I found out after service that one of our elderly members, a gentle fellow named Elmer, had seen the Merlin lookalike walking in and had whispered to his wife, "Oh, good, it looks like we're going to have a skit today." He and all the others in the church, they smiled graciously and warmly, and they welcomed the guest in the Merlin costume and all. And that morning, our congregation loved that uniquely clad man. He stayed, he listened, he didn't cause trouble, he heard the gospel, and even stayed after to discuss it with several of us for an hour. Those thoughts that rushed into my brain as service began were God talking. The prophet Joel says, "Return to the Lord your God, for he is merciful and compassionate, slow to get angry and filled with unfailing love. He is eager to relent and not punish."